भक्ति सिद्धांत सरस्वती ठाकुर प्रभुपाद की जय। आनंद कोटि वैष्णव वृंद की जय। सांदेर भक्त वृंद की जय। गौर प्रेमानंदी All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gaur.
Underneath the overturned boats.
Yes, Reverend. The river, when the Anatomies were jumped upside down, and ricocheted and broke sand underneath those boats. And for his eating utensil, he had used the skull of a human. That was his, to take his foodstuffs from. There's description that at one time he became so much sought after for being an advanced Vaishnava, because at that time we began the appreciation of the advanced Vaishnavas were principally Babaji's. He deliberately went to the marketplace and purchased the most fancy set of clothes he could find. Nice white, everything very, very, very nice, very expensive. And thinking in this way, by dressing and attiring himself very luxuriously, anyone would leave him alone. What can he say? Babaji. He has this title Babaji, but he's not a Babaji, he's not at all announced. In this way, he is trying to announce the glorification and appreciation of others. And someone who knows this narration more precisely than I can correct me if this description is wrong, but he his humility by saying that when he dies, his body should be dragged through the marketplace just to demonstrate how low the creature should be treated. So after he left his body, sure enough, some residents of the village proceeded to drag, because, remember, he was respected as a great Vaishnava. They took his body and began to drag it through the streets, and Bhaktisiddhanta heard of this, immediately came upon the scene and challenged all the rascals who were doing this to, if you can dare touch the body of a Vaishnava in this way, one who comes step forward who has been free from sinful activity, particularly saying illicit sex, for the past year, and so on, in decreasing increments of time, the whole crowd dispelled. Of course, there's the description of the description of his the request made by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta to Gokishore to become his spiritual master, and twice denied. There's one description I heard, I believe it's Jagatakana who's making this description, that at this particular time Gokishore was in a very remote place that one had to cross a little footbridge to get to where he was. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta threatened to throw himself off the footbridge and kill himself if Gokishore refused to accept him as a disciple. Gokishore had no disciples. Bhaktisiddhanta insisted, and Gokishore accepted finally, on that basis. Anything else anybody can add? Mention anything else? Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, who is renunciation personified. Vairagya Murtaya. He is always merged in a feeling of separation and intense love of Krishna. Nipuranda. Sambhu Ray. Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Bhaktim Hara Bhagavati Prabhaham Ajasvam Ananda Bhaspa Kalaya Moho Ajamana Niklajamana Hridaya Pulakachitanga Natmanam Asmarad Asa Iti Muktalinga Bhaktimhara Bhagavati Prabhaham Ajasram Ananda Bhaspa Kalayam Arjamana Vikridyamana Hridaya Pravakachitanga Natmanam Asmaradat Asadvitimam Muktavinga Asmaradat Savitimuktavinga Bhaktim Hara Bhagavati Pravaham Najasram Ananda Bhaspa Kalaya Mohar Arjamana Vikridyamana Hridaya Pulakachitanga Natmanam Asmarara Saviti Muktalinga Bhaktim Hara Bhagavati Pravahana Jasram Ananda Bhaspa Kalayamur Arjamana Vikridyamana Hridaya Pravakachitanga Natmanam Asmarana Saviti Muktalinga Bhaktimhara Bhagavati Pravaham Ajasram Ananda Bhaspa Kalayamur Arjamana Vikridyamana Hridaya Pravakachitanga Bhaktim Devotional Service Hara Unto Hari Bhagavati The Supreme Personality of Godhead Brahman Constantly engaged in Ajasam Always Ananda Blissful Bhaspa Kalaya By a stream of tears Mohu Again and again Arjamana Being overwhelmed Vikridyamana Melting Hridaya His heart Pulaka Standing of hairs Achita Covered Anga His body Na Not Atmanam Body Asmarat, he remembered. Asa, he. Iti, thus. Muktalinga, free from the subtle body. Translation, because of his transcendental bliss, incessant tears flowed from his eyes, his heart melted, and there was shivering and standing of the hairs all over his body. Thus transformed in a trance of devotional service. Yoga Maharaj completely forgot his bodily existence and thus he immediately became liberated from material bondage. The purpose of the Prabhupada. subject to constant engagement in devotional service, hearing, chanting, remembering, worshipping the deity, etc., as prescribed in nine varieties, there are different symptoms which appear in the body of a devotee. These eight bodily transformations, which indicate that a devotee is already liberated within himself, are called Ashta Sattika Vikara. When a devotee completely forgets his bodily existence, he should be understood to be liberated. He is no longer encaged in the body. An example is given that when a coconut becomes completely dry, the coconut pulp within the coconut shell separates from the bondage of the shell and the outer covering. By moving the dry coconut, one can hear that the pulp within is no longer attached to the shell or to the covering. Similarly, when one is fully absorbed in devotional service, he is completely disconnected from the two material coverings, the subtle and gross bodies. Dhruva Maharaj actually attained this stage of life by constantly discharging devotional service. He has already been described as a Mahabhagavata. For unless one becomes a Mahabhagavata, or a first-class pure devotee, these symptoms are not visible. Lord Chaitanya exhibited all these symptoms. Thakur Haridas also exhibited them. And there are many pure devotees who manifested such bodily symptoms. They are not to be imitated, but when one is actually advanced, these symptoms are exhibited. At that time, it is to be understood that a devotee is materially free. Of course, from the beginning of devotional service, the path of liberation immediately opens. Just as the coconut taken from the tree immediately begins to dry, it simply takes some time for the shell and pulp to separate from one another. An important word in this verse is mukta linga. Mukta means liberated, and linga means the subtle body. When a man dies, he quits the gross body, but the subtle body of mind, intelligence, and ego carries him to a new body. While existing in the present body, the same subtle body carries him from one stage of life to another. For example, from childhood to boyhood, by mental development. The mental condition of a baby is different from that of a boy. The mental condition of a boy is different from that of a young man, and the mental condition of a young man is different from that of an old man. So, at death, the process of changing bodies takes place due to the subtle body. Mind, intelligence, and ego carry the soul from one body to another. This is called transmigration of the soul. But there is another stage where one becomes liberated even from the subtle body. At that time, the living entity is competent and fully prepared to be transferred to the transcendental or spiritual world. The description of the bodily symptoms of Sri Dhruva Maharaj makes it apparent that he became perfectly fit to be transferred to the spiritual world. One can experience the distinction between the subtle and gross bodies every and even daily. In a dream, one's gross body is lying on the bed, while the subtle body carries the soul, the living entity, to another atmosphere. But because the gross body has to be continued, the subtle body comes back and settles in the present gross body. Therefore, one has to become free from the subtle body also. This freedom is known as mukta linga. This is a brief description of the symptoms of into mental ecstasy, very similar to the descriptions that we've been hearing in Chaitanya Charitamrita, here being exhibited by Dhruva Maharaj. The translation starts, because of his transcendental bliss, his incessant tears flowed from his eyes, his heart melted, and there was shivering and standing of the hairs all over his body. It's described in the verse as well, Prabhupada describes this as devotional service of Dhruva Maharaj, although the form of that devotional service was different than the devotional service that we're practicing presently, at least in appearance, in principle, the same is the practice that we heard yesterday, where I said Dhruva Maharaj was fixing his mind in the form of Archimurti, as we are doing also. And he was doing this Dhammagram in the practice of Ashtanga Yoga. And in this state of complete trance, complete absorption, great feelings of ecstasy, of transcendental bliss were passing like waves over Dhruva Maharaj. A few very simple points Prabhupada indicates in the purport. That is, he's making a comparison between clipping of a coconut. From that time that you cut the coconut, very quickly, the drying process begins. And in due course of time, it's a very predictable thing, very reliable thing, the coconut will dry out. We would pop inside the dollar from the shell and it would completely separate. You can rattle it and hear it inside, bouncing around. So in the same manner, the analogy follows, that by constant engagement in devotional service, through any one or combination of the nine processes of devotional service, this perfection can be expected. This stage of complete detachment from body and mind. As if to make emphasis, the second point is illustrated also. Muktalinga, thought of detachment even to the subtle body. Because detachment from the gross body is something that, like it or not, sooner or later, that is going to be experienced by everyone. Experience it daily, as Prabhupada is saying, as evidenced by our dreams, where clearly the body isn't doing so many things, it's lying there, limp, doing nothing. But the subtle body is doing so many things, so many transformations are going on. So this Muktalinga stage is where one is completely detached also from the subtle body. This question arises. In a number of different ways. People ask this question of devotees, and we should be able to answer correctly. One who's absorbed so much in the bodily concept of life can't imagine how one can function while completely detached from his body. So does that stage come where one no longer experiences the dualities of material existence? And the answer is yes. When one is completely detached, just like the example is given, you're wearing some clothing and your clothing rips. You may very well know that clothing is ripped, but you don't experience any pain that clothing is ripped. You may know what to do, how to patch the clothing up, or discard the clothing and get another set of clothing. At least those of us that are performing preaching work should know that we should do that. Don't walk around with ripped and torn clothing. But one isn't experiencing the pain of that event. So similarly, there's information Bhagavad Gita, which indicates that the experience of the dualities of material existence subside. There are other references within the Shastra. There one becomes, and here's one reference also. There's a reference where Parvati is speaking to Lord Shiva, describing the complete detachment from bodily pains and pleasures. That doesn't mean that one becomes unconscious. Become Krishna conscious doesn't mean become unconscious. One still maintains consciousness of these things, but no longer identifies with them. That's all. One can reach, just to repeat it, one can reach that stage where one no longer experiences the dualities of material pain and pleasure. This is a very relevant thing, because those who are, there are a group of scholarly type Christians who claim this, they're not the same as the street fanatics who are just keep thumping the phrase of only through Christ everyone else is finished. But they have this idea, the bit more scholarly ones have this idea that within Christianity, Christ was the only, is the salvation, the act of salvation that Christ performed. And I've, many times, I've experienced this argument. From time to time. But even though maybe some great saintly person or some other preceptor or founder of some religion or so on, the exclusive thing of the crucifixion and resurrection of Christ, this makes Christianity exclusive. They have this sectarian point of view. However, Prabhupada comments that those who are Christians, they think that Christ was experiencing great pain, are foolish. They don't understand the transcendental position of Jesus Christ. The argument of these scholarly Christians goes something like this, that this was the exclusive position of Christ because he was the same as God, yet at the same time he exhibited his worldliness through this temptation and crying out at the pain of his experience during the crucifixion. He was God in flesh. This is not acceptable in spiritual circles. This is their interpretation or their speculation. However, the transcendentalist, it's been described very lucidly, that the transcendentalist, their consciousness becomes so concentrated that in love, in transcendental love of God, that their consciousness becomes completely detached from the body. More than that, their consciousness becomes completely detached from the subtle body. They no longer identify even with the thinking or feeling or willing stage of this subtle body. Because attachment to either brings one to a position of repeated birth and death. But repeated birth and, conversely, repeated birth and death process is finished when one no longer identifies in that way. That's not to say that within one's mind there are no longer thoughts and feelings and desires. But one who completely identifies through their through the practice of devotional service, through following very, very carefully, as Prabhupada writes here, due to constant engagement in devotional service, in any one of the mind processes, and then gradually various symptoms of transcendence appear in the body of such a transcendental person. Complete absorption. Meaning that that implies complete detachment. Rather instead, one's body, because of that spiritual consciousness or Krishna consciousness, one's body will be naturally engaged, corresponding to that consciousness in activities of devotion, and one's thoughts will be dwelling in thoughts of the Lord, and one's feelings will be in relation to the Lord, and one's desires will be in relation to the Lord. So although there is the presence of the gross and subtle bodies, one is completely detached from them within this material world. This is the principle where the master of the senses engages the collective senses. One's own senses become the servant of the master. Krishna directly takes charge of his pure devotee. He directly engages, directly gives dictation for engagement of the body and of the mind. Not in the gross body and the subtle body, but the fully surrendered pure devotee. So here, in this case, Guru's ecstasies are being described. Guru Maharaj completely forgot his bodily existence, and thus immediately he became liberated from material bondage. The cause of this material bondage is our identification with the body, and simultaneously with that identification of the body, the desire through this body to try to enjoy separately from Krishna. So progressively that mistaken conception of life is replaced through devotional practices, and the reassurance is being given here that by carefully following these processes, by staying continuously engaged in these processes of devotional service, that stage one can expect with certainty. As one becomes more advanced, it's not like that. No, it's completely aloof. Guru Maharaj completely forgot his bodily existence in a state of trance. The shape by the subtle. that indicates I'm trying to recall artists' own description or even within our artists' depictions, things, paintings that pop out of period where there are subtle bodies that are not human, but other forms corresponding to the consciousness. So that those two statements don't contradict at all. The shadow, what's the shadow of a dog? Must have a different, the shadow is of a different form than a human shadow corresponding to the form of the dog, which is that particular form because of the consciousness of the soul of being.
Just like, you know, Boss, where Boss is standing here, attending a smartphone class, and his body is going like this. That means his center body is not like right there. Even while he's standing there, with the speaker going down and sleeping at night. But, you know, you may be sitting at your desk, daydreaming. But, you only get a chance to read one. Body is there and your center body is somewhere else. Daydreaming. Daydreaming, not dreaming. Not the time dreaming. Next breath goes on working. The center body is more or less. You know, we have this space time. So the center body is somewhere else. The center's mind is somewhere else. And they're doing what they're doing. But right here, it has entered another atmosphere. Common phenomenon happens all the time. This is just describing a phenomenon that in what he told. We discuss more because we're all the time.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Tat Tata Vachcha Bhadran Te Yamunaya Tatam Shuchi Punyam Madhuvanam Yatra Sanidhyam Nityada Hare Tat Tata Gachcha Bhadram Te Yamunaya Tatam Shuchi Punyam Madhuvanam Yatra Sanidhyam Nityada Hare Tattata Gachcha Bhadram Te Yamunaya Satam Suchi Punyam Madhuvanam Yatra Sanidhyam Nityada Hare Tattata Gachcha Bhadram Te Yamunaya Satam Suchi Punyam Madhuvanam Yatra Sanidhyam Nityada Hare Bhadram, good fortune. Say for you, Yamunaya of the Yamuna. Tatam, bank. Shuchi, being purified. Punyam, the holy. Madhuvanam, of the name Madhuvana. Yatra, where? Sanidhyam, be nearer. Nityada, always. Hare, of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So translation, my dear boy, I therefore wish all good fortune for you. You should go to the bank of the Jamuna, where there is a virtuous forest named Madhuvana, and there be purified. Just by going there, one draws nearer to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who always lives there. The fourth, both Narada Muni and Suniti, the mother of Dhruva Maharaj, advised Dhruva Maharaj to worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now, Narada Muni is especially giving him directions how his worship of a Supreme Person can very quickly fructify. He recommends that Dhruva Maharaj go to the bank of the Jamuna, where there is a forest of the name Madhuvana, and begin his meditation and worship there. Places of pilgrimage yield a special advantage for a devotee in quickly advancing his spiritual life. Lord Krishna lives everywhere, but still, it is very easy to approach him in holy places of pilgrimage because these places are inhabited by great sages. Lord Sri Krishna says that he lives wherever his devotees are chanting the glory of his transcendental activity. There are many places of pilgrimage in India, and especially prominent are Bhagavati Narayana, Dwaraka, Rameshwara, and Jagannath Puri. These sacred places are called the four dhamas. Dhamma refers to a place where one can immediately contact the Supreme Lord. To go to Bhagavati Narayana, one has to pass through Hardwar on the path to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Similarly, there are other holy places of pilgrimage, such as Prayag, or Allahabad, and Mathura, and the topmost of them all is Vrindavan. Unless one is very advanced in spiritual life, it is recommended that he live in such holy places and execute devotional service there. I guess we should stop the Bhagavatam and just get into playing some. Unless one is very advanced in spiritual life, it is recommended that he live in such holy places and execute devotional service there. But an advanced devotee like Narada Muni, who is engaged in preaching work, can serve the Supreme Lord anywhere. Sometimes he even goes to the hellish planets. Hellish conditions do not affect Narada Muni because he is engaged in greatly responsible activities in devotional service. According to the statement of Narada Muni, Madhuvana, which is still existing in the Vrindavan area, in the district of Mathura, is a most sacred place. Many saintly persons still live there and engage in devotional service of the Lord. There are 12 forests in the area of Vrindavan, and Madhuvana is one of them. Pilgrims from all parts of India assemble together and visit all 12 of these forests. There are 5 forests on the eastern bank of the Jamuna: Bhadravana, Dilvavana, Rauhavana, Bhandiravana, and Mahavana. On the western side of the bank, there are 7, Madhuvana, Talavana, Kamudadvana, Bahulavana, Kanyavana, Kandiravana, and Vrindavana. In those 12 forests, there are different ghats, or bathing places. They are listed as follows. That is a list of 24 bathing ghats. Are you ready? What is that even? Bathing ghats. Abhimukta, Abhimudha, Guyacheta, Pravancheta, Kanak, Kala, Chinduka Cheta, Surya Cheta, Vatasvami, Dhruva Ghat, and then there's an explanation,
hill of that, where there are many nice trees and of fruits and flowers, is famous, because Dhruva Maharaj meditated and underwent severe penances and austerities there, in an elevated spot. So this is, these dots are amongst, they're situated somewhere in these 12 forests on either side of the Jamuna. So number 10 is Nishi Tirtha, then Moksha Tirtha, Buddha Tirtha, Gokarna, Krishna Ganga, Vaikuntha, Asikunda, Chatur Samudrika Kupa, Akrura Tirtha. This is where Krishna and Balaram were going to mature in the chariot driven by Akrura. All of them took baths in this ghat. Jagnika Vitrasthana, Kubja Kupa, Ranga Stala, Mancha Stala, Malayudya Stana, and Vishashva Meza. That's the end of the first one. So I read the verse again. My dear boy, I therefore wish all good fortune for you. You should go to the bank of the Jamuna where there is a virtuous forest named Madhuvana, and there be purified. Just by going there, one draws nearer to the Supreme Personality of Godhead who always lives there. So it's a very important component for understanding the sacred places and the benefit that they have. The benefit that they have, ultimately the benefit they have is because it reminds, there's something, some special quality there that reminds one of Krishna. Place of pilgrimage has been purified by the touch of the presence of the Supreme Lord. In some way. The Prabhupada presents this other understanding in this purport, and that is, the place of pilgrimage is of value, or as the verse says, it draws one nearer to the Supreme Personality of Godhead because of the saintly persons who reside there. And then it's explained. Saintly persons have this feature about them that they like to talk about Krishna. That's one way you can tell who is a saintly person. Actually, this book that we distribute, Chant and Be Happy. I heard the tape of this conversation between John Lennon and George Harrison and Yoko Ono and Prabhupada, and parts of it are edited out, in part because they're a little offensive. I mean, they're not crassly offensive, they're just, their manner of speech is considering, it's not so respectful in certain circumstances. Anyway, the part, there was one particular part that I recall very vividly. I could recognize John Lennon's voice, and he was asking Prabhupada, how do I know whose translation of Bhagavad Gita to read? If I accept that Krishna is the personality of Godhead, how do I know that yours is the best translation? And he was said in a challenging way. Submissively. And so Prabhupada replied to put him in his place. So if you do accept that Krishna is the personality of Godhead, no long pause, as much to say as, I know that you don't. But if you do, then Prabhupada turned it around and said, then whose translation would you want to read? It's important for the Prabhupada now he's putting John Lennon in his place. Actually, I know you don't accept Krishna. But if you did, if anyone did, genuinely, if you accept that Krishna is the personality of God, Krishna is God, who would you want to go to hear the presentation of Krishna's words? And in essence, Prabhupada said someone who is completely attached to Krishna. Someone who is always talking about Krishna, always thinking about Krishna, always acting for Krishna. In fact, their whole life is filled with simply Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. Prabhupada said that person would be able to explain Bhagavad Gita to you. That person's translation of Bhagavad Gita you should read. Because that person knows Krishna. That person is addicted to Krishna in every way. They know Krishna very well. This is the quality by which one who can properly represent Krishna is to be known. Someone who knows Krishna very well in this way. So this is saying the same thing in reverse, that in the saintly person is attracted to reside in a sacred place. You may know this from the older devotees will know this, but the younger devotees may not know this. When Prabhupada established ISKCON, and we're going to commemorate that day, anniversary of Prabhupada's establishing ISKCON comes on Sunday. Is that correct? 15th. So that's Friday. July 15th. July. I'm sorry. Yeah, July 15th. So it's coming up in a month from now. So when Prabhupada established ISKCON, he personally established the according to the state law of New York, in order to incorporate something, you have to make a statement of purpose, the purpose of the corporation. And one has to be very thoughtful in establishing the purpose of the corporation, because by law, if later on you do something other than what's in the purpose, then you're violating that corporate status, and your corporate status can be revoked. So, of course, some lawyer was advising Prabhupada, this is the law. The Prabhupada was writing very carefully the statement of purpose. And included in the statement of purpose was this curious declaration of establishing places of pilgrimage of Krishna, meaning temples. So, establishing a place of pilgrimage, just like twice I heard Prabhupada speaking here in New York, once on the, in the Henry Street Temple, saying in a very, he was very amused with his own statement, Father was saying, this temple is not indifferent. It is in fact indifferent. His eyes went real big. He said the same thing when we were at the 51st Street. And who thinks of Midtown Manhattan as their temple? Establishing a place of pilgrimage, establishing a little spot of Vaikuntha in the middle of Manhattan, based on this activity of worshipping the form of the deity and hearing and discussing topics of Krishna and chanting the holy name and rendering devotional service to Krishna with so many different descriptions. This is a place of pilgrimage. It's a pastime of Krishna, because while this chanting of Krishna's glory is going on, Krishna is attracted, and Krishna personally comes. I remember hearing this description also, that when Vaidhyanatha, because we're beginning of our sankirtan activities in America, based on what Prabhupada had established for us, was simply going out and chanting all day long. Another new devotee would be Sasarad devotee, that, you know, had his share of drug experiences before came to devotee, was explaining this. Yeah, Prabhupada said that when we go on Ramayana, Lord Chaitanya is there, he's dancing with us. So he was like, you know, looking everywhere, here and there, see Lord Chaitanya dancing. But Lord Chaitanya is attracted. He is certainly attracted because he inaugurated this public congregational chanting of the holy name. but he's present. He will track with him personally, participates. And in fact, all the demigods. So, first, yesterday we were at this festival of India, something was going on with these little Christian tracks. Just out of curiosity, I read one. Because they're asking, in this little track, they're asking what happens to the soul after death. And they gave some quote from the Bible. I don't know where, I don't recall where the quote was from. But basically it was saying that the soul after death goes to the Lord, who is situated in the air in the clouds somewhere. It's specifically recited in that way. The Lord is somewhere up there, floating around. Anyway, if their conception is the Lord is somewhere floating around in the clouds, certainly he can be present in the kirtan. Nothing difficult to get from the clouds to here. We can do it with machines. God can certainly do it. But actually he is everywhere. And Krishna is attracted by hearing his glorification. And why is he attracted by hearing his glorification? We can understand it in a number of ways. One very basic way, we can understand that God is attracted by hearing his glorification by the fact that we are also attracted by the hearing of our own glorification. However meek and humble one may be, one is always very alert and attentive, as soon as one hears the calling of one's name. Oh, they're talking about me. If we have this quality, where does this quality come from? It's exclusive in us and not in God, no. Krishna is attractive. But why is he attractive? Not from some false egoistic, because this came up in one of our programs in the village recently. Someone was making a complaint. This is pretty selfish. God wants everyone to talk about him all the time and sing about him and praise him all the time. That's pretty self-centered. As if bringing God to their level would allow them to understand God and minimize the statements of Bhagavad Gita to establish their statements superior to Krishna's. It's a pretty tricky little maneuver. But actually, Krishna is attracted to the glorification of his name and fame and qualities and activities and pastimes because it is a source of churning the natural love that the living entity has because it's beneficial for the living entity. He is attracted. This is a natural relationship that exists between the living entity and God, that of a selfless love. Just as the position is there for the living entity to come, as we read in Chaitanya Charitamrita, to come to the stage of love, pure love of God, in which one doesn't care for liberation, doesn't care for something material. Simply the highest state of emotion and thought of Krishna. And Krishna is always, he is the giver of liberation because he is always liberated himself. So this condition is there also in Krishna. He is simply his pleasure, his enjoyment is ever increasingly expanded by seeing the happiness of his. Krishna, one is drawn into Krishna's association, willingly or unwillingly. And frankly, this was one of my personal realizations about the difficulty of establishing these festivals. Such a struggle with so many administrative, bureaucratic bottlenecks. But why? It's such a simple thing. If we weren't putting on a Hare Krishna festival, because I, in many of these meetings, community board meetings and smart committee meetings and this and that. So many people would fly forward. They want 5 blocks for 2 days, supposed to set up 10 more things. Immediately, oh yes, this is very civically oriented, this is very cultural. But as soon as you want to present something about Krishna, you have to do it in a real narrow area, and don't make any noise, and don't say anything. They want to confront it and stomp it out and extinguish. Because of immature consciousness. But actually, we do have love for Krishna in their heart also, somewhere. And we can see this effect. If you take part in your sankirtan activity, your preaching activity, because everyone is performing some preaching in some way, you very attentively watch. It transforms people's hearts. It's a very nice presentation of Krishna consciousness in all of its various varieties. It transforms people's hearts, even the demoniac. Become transformed. Just listening to a talk yesterday, Prabhupada was saying, Kamsa had first-class Krishna consciousness. He was thinking of Krishna all the time. He just wanted to kill him. He couldn't get Krishna out of his mind. Of course, then he went on to explain that's not favorable. Therefore, we don't accept that as devotional service. It's unfavorable consciousness, but it's the right idea. Can't get Krishna out of their mind. We had one demon doing this to us yesterday. It started when the devotee was chanting with Japa in front of the exhibit, and it was me. He couldn't control himself. He had to stop chanting. He wasn't going to leave his body. He wanted to stop. He threatened to tear the exhibits down, to blow them up. He took a rock and he was going to throw it at me and throw it at the exhibits, and he was completely crazy. And once he got started, when his girlfriend was also completely crazy, and just went on and on. Finally, he had to call the police. He couldn't get Krishna out of his mind. It was everywhere. Krishna was everywhere, everywhere he looked. He saw something that reminded him of Krishna. And just as that's there for the demoniac, so also the innocent. Everywhere. This should be our life. So much energy the soul has. So let that energy of the soul expand unlimitedly to produce those things that which will remind people of Krishna no matter what, even if they don't want. Even if their mentality is demoniac, still they'll see Krishna everywhere. I reassure them, don't worry, sir, just go down the block. You'll be reminded of Krishna also, we're chanting down there. It's just you can do this. That really is funny. By performing our devotional service, our preaching activity regularly, that makes the place where we're performing our devotional service also a place of pilgrimage. Even if it's rotten New York City. And what is so wonderful about this neighborhood of Brooklyn? We've transformed it into a place of pilgrimage. And what makes that place of pilgrimage? Glorification of Krishna. Very nice deity worship. Very nice kirtan, very nice association, very nice prasadam, very nice hospitality to receive Krishna's guests very nicely and warmly. And introduce them to something about Krishna. I was listening to some comments that some of these traffic meter load cops were making. Oh, they're very nice people. We don't know anything that they're saying to anybody. They're very nice people. They're very peaceful. There wasn't a lot of people I was trying to set up exhibits because it was late because of the traffic getting there. These people are very nice, very peaceful. They'll feel that way if they're only trying to give them something very wonderful. Without some selfish thought, which is the verses are describing. Without some reward that I'm going to get out of it, even up to the point of liberation, if I just keep doing this, I'm going to get out of this crazy place. but with the thought, the higher thought of, let me give them Krishna somehow. Somehow, everyone. So this is our advancement. It's our benefit, just as this direction is being given by our GBC members to try to increase the number of devotees. This should be our day and night, 24-hour, non-stop meditation. But it's not just, for the benefit of the temple. It's for our benefit. This is our Krishna consciousness to think in this way. We should be thinking in this way all the time. That's Krishna consciousness. To bring conditioned souls to the lotus feet of Radha Govinda so they can take their darshan, become enamored by their beauty, and give their life to them, just as we have. That's devotion. That's Krishna consciousness. And whatever we're doing now, that's developing that to some extent in our life, then we have to increase that, the quality of it, and the regulation of it. Then that makes this place even more a very, very potent place of pilgrimage. So that, as the verse is describing, anyone who comes is drawn nearer to Krishna. So if we can stop there. Any discussion? Questions? The mountain is chanting Krishna's glory, then it certainly is like a pilgrimage. Vrindavan, for example, for some time the places of pastime of Krishna were covered, but Vrindavan is eternal abode, eternal realm. So there is some difference. They say that everything is from Krishna, or of Krishna, so you have to make some distinctions.